As automated technology continues to evolve and grow, it affects how we interact with each other and how we vote. Now, that's all well and good, but how can we make sure that this is happening ethically and effectively? And if it's not, and there's issues, they are being addressed. And most importantly, how can we make sure that data-driven policies are coming into effect so that politicians are making choices that are idealistic towards their constituents and the society at large? Join us to tackle AI and politics right now.
Welcome to Smarter Than AI. Last time we took a deeper dive into the bigger moral dilemmas that AI currently faces today. The issues that it creates surrounding privacy, data protection, accountability, equality, control, and the overall benefit that it has in our lives has only begun to be debated. And that's why we're glad you've joined us today, because we're going to talk about how AI can be managed by the government and used in politics. The use of AI is becoming more and more popular. However, with this growth becomes strain as existing regulation and laws struggle to deal with new challenges, some of which we highlighted in our last episode. As a result, policymakers around the world are moving quickly to ensure that existing laws and regulations remain relevant and are set up to deal with these emerging challenges in the wake of technological change. However, it's hard to predict the future. Without fully knowing how it will be used and what will be abused, most government officials are waiting to see what might happen before they take any action. Hey, Kostom, how's it going today, bud?
And not bad. It was a good sunny Friday in Toronto, so that was good. It's my day off, but you know what? We always love recording these, so I'm excited to get into AI and politics. What about you? How was your day?
Busy one, man. It never stops in marketing, let me tell you.
Yeah, crazy, crazy busy.
And on that note, question one. Are you ready for this?
Let's do it.
So in marketing, we have a term called the sphere of influence. Essentially, it's a new term. It's like a term used to describe entities that can persuade you to take action, like buying a new pair of shoes. So those entities could be your social media, your friends, your family. It could be anything.
Okay.
So today, that sphere of influence, though, is largely driven by social media and search, like Google, for example, or Facebook. And this is especially true during COVID. So given that these search and Facebook are largely driven by AI and they're designed to sell ads, how can AI affect your sphere of influence?
That's nice. That's interesting. I never knew that sphere of influence had a deeper meaning than what you would think, but that's really cool. The more you get to know about marketing, I guess. So I'll say this. Okay, so do I think that AI can influence you? Absolutely. We see that every day. Do I think AI can specifically influence, for example, who we vote for? Absolutely, again. And we've got a few examples of this. So in anticipation of this episode, I did some research and wanted to make sure my facts were straight. We'll talk about President Obama from the United States and his campaign of 2012, okay? So first off, Obama is known as this big data president because he put, I think, $200 million into his big data research initiative. But coming back to his campaign, that's his 2012 campaign, it was largely successful because of all the data mining and micro-targeting that was done by his campaign on his behalf, okay? And let me say this, I don't know, him and his campaign came out right to decline that there was any sort of micro-targeting and data mining that had been done or what exactly had been done. But we know this happened. So without getting into political views, because we know that can get a little too racy, what are your thoughts specifically on gun control?
That's a good question, man. I'm a Saskatchewan born and I live in Alberta, right?
Okay.
So it's an interesting topic because my views personally, handguns, obviously, they should be regulated. Mm-hmm. Hunting rifles, I think it's important maybe that they are regulated, but at the same time, I don't think there needs to be as much control on hunters as there are on the general public that, you know what I mean? It depends on the use, really, at the end of the day.
Yeah. But say, so you're from Alberta, right? Saskatchewan born. And you're fairly, let's say, neutral on gun rights. You're not far left, far right, right? But say somebody was a Democrat, and Democrats are known to be far left on this issue where guns should be banned, right? And same with liberals here. We see that very often. What micro-targeting means is that they are going to be ads specifically targeting you when it comes to controlling gun laws, right? These ads are specifically going to go towards you and not go towards Republicans, right? It's not that a president or prime minister can win the election by only going towards, like, let's say, one political ideology, be it leftist, rightist, or neutral. You have to try and grab a bunch of all, right, to actually be successful. So that's why micro-targeting is, that's what happens in micro-targeting, is that we know this person has, through their data mining, is a Democrat or is a liberal, and most likely will be on the far left when it comes to gun control. So let us only give them ads that are gun law specific on the far left side, whereas when it comes to Republican, the same ad will not be shown, or when it comes to conservatives, that same ad will not be shown. So that's micro targeting. So you can already see how AI has played effect. And this was in 2012. So this is what, 9 years ago? Mm-hmm. Another example of this was in the Indian elections in 2014. I'm Indian, by the way, so I follow this. So our president, or the president in India, Prime Minister of India, I don't know how it's happening to me, is Narendra Modi, right? And he's known to be people's president because he's very sort of in style. You know, he'll have the fanciest haircuts and like the nicest beards, and right, you know, will be up with the lingo, right? He'll be tweeting all the time, and pretty much like Trump was, but like not that bad, I guess. I'm going to read a statement out of Narendra Modi's camp from his 2014 elections. And this is by this guy named Arvind Gupta, which was who was a strategist for their campaign, or probably still is. He says that we have developed our own customized digital tools based on both commissioned and open source data that puts us in direct touch with voters. And this is off the back of 3.67 million followers on Twitter for Narendra Modi, 12 million likes on Facebook, and 68 million page views on Google+, right? And the same thing happened with Donald Trump in 2016. We're not, I think two sort of examples shows us what's up here, but you see that AI is influencing our sphere of influence, AI is affecting our sphere of influence, especially when it comes to votes. We can see this.
Yeah, for sure. So here's my question for you then, like, given this astronomical reach that these politicians have, mm-hmm. you know, and how they can interact directly with their voters. I mean, should it be regulated then? And if we want to regulate it, how do we do that?
Oh, that's very interesting. I think there's definitely two schools of thought, both pointing towards regulation. There's not many people out there that don't admit that this technology or technology in general should be regulated. So it's definitely being fast-tracked now these days. And we've seen that how even Canada is becoming the leader in cyber security, right? And cybersecurity laws. I think it was a month ago, our cybersecurity partner at MNP was talking to us about how these new laws are going to bring much tight-knit security measures needed to regulate the cyberspace, which is cool. And especially with the recent U.S. elections, we know that President Biden is heavily... He's sort of what... He walks in the footsteps of Obama, right? The big data president, like we said. And he's looking to fast track all AI ML regulations, right? And I did some research on how this is supposed to happen and how we know that US is sort of the leader in this regulation space when it comes to the world, and in the sense that the world looks up to the US whenever it does something, right?
Right.
So it's sort of important to talk about it, not to just toot their horn. But we know that because of Biden, regulations will be fast-tracked through House and Senate because they have obviously a Democratic majority there. And Democrats favor, we can see this through AOC and Jagmeet Singh, who's our who's the leader here in Brampton, right? From Brampton. We can see that happening. They're both very aligned on, whenever they talk about AI and technology, they're both very aligned on how it should be regulated. We saw them playing, Among Us on stream, right?
Yeah.
And that obviously has nothing to do with AI specifically, but it's just our politicians being in touch with what's recent and what's new, right? And we saw that when there was a recent bill called the Algorithmic Accountability Act of 2019. And this saw Senator Ron Wyden and Cory Booker, which they're planning to reintroduce these bills again in 2021, because in 2019 there was a different administration. In 2021, these bills are planning to be reintroduced to pass through House and Senate fairly quickly. The second thing is federal agencies would get much broader mandate that include AIML. And this is something that is very interesting, very important, because we can't let something get out of hand and then it can be reactive, right? And we saw that in cybersecurity. I mean, even if you talk to a cop that's an older cop, and they talk about cybersecurity, and to them it's just all like voodoo. Why is there a unit that looks at crime statistics or fraudulent sort of money wiring? What does that mean? How can you do groundwork, right? But we know that's super important. And we expect the situation to be addressed fairly quickly, right? By broadening mandates. And a law can only do so much, but it's only when the agencies that are enacting these laws actually come up to speed, right?
Yeah. So I've got another question for you, and it's kind of based off that sphere of influence question that I posed to you previously, because I want to take a little bit of a deeper dive into it.
Okay.
I want to talk about malicious actors, like fake accounts created by like organizations outside of democratic countries, countries themselves who start to spread false information on social media sites. Anybody who creates false, like these weird conspiracy theories online, or creates scams that further an agenda to simply just create chaos from the looks of things, that somehow benefits them. And it seems like, and I know this for a fact, they do this by purchasing ads that link to sites that seem credible to further their own agenda at the end of the day. And it's largely targeting democracies across the world, where every vote counts. They're sort of like gaming the system, really, in creating these false narratives, basically, I think, to just destabilize our economy, to shift eyes away from the atrocities they may be committing on themselves, or simply just to create like government distrust in our voters. Can AI help us protect against these malicious actors in any way that are spreading this false information?
That's a really good question. I mean, malicious actors, we've sort of known and talked about malicious actors when it comes to sort of viruses, right? I feel like if you think about malware, right?
Yeah.
The first thing you think is an antivirus. I mean, you could ask anyone from the ages of 20 to 80, maybe not 80, but 60, 70, whoever uses a computer understands that. But malicious actors are a much bigger issue than that, right? And it sort of sparks that ethics in AI discussion again. And I'm going to try and keep this answer short and sweet. I think this is a very wrapped up thing, at least in my head.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some things that have happened in recent memory, right? Donald Trump's banning from Twitter. So as much as we like to believe that somebody on Twitter's ends are sitting there and trying to ban specific people, that's not how it works. There are these AI programs called convolutional neural networks, which is a branch of AI, which I think we'll talk about sometime. These CNNs are going out there and crawling the Twitter website to look out for false information, right?
Yep.
And that could be one of the ways that it's happening. If you look at Facebook, and Facebook's known to do this with far-right commentary a lot. Well, they'll ban specific far-right pages, right?
Yep.
And that happens. So you could say that that's AI trying to control these malicious actors, right? Let me ask you this. We all know freedom of speech, and you know we try and keep up to that, right? We will try and push that. So what, and we know that AI and bias exists, and we've talked about this, I think, in Ethics and AI.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about bias, right?
Yep.
So according to you, I mean, is it fair that somebody that's written this AI could be biased, could be not, because we don't know exactly how they work, right?
Right.
It's proprietary information.
Right.
Is that fair that they get to control the narrative around a certain topic? I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't agree with anything or most things that Donald Trump has to say or any, you know, fake news agency has to say. I'm not in any way sort of promoting that. I am just saying that, is it fair that this AI gets to choose what has commentary, what has a voice, what has doesn't?
Okay, so I'm of two minds of this. I believe in freedom of speech. I don't think Donald Trump should have been deplatformed, but I do think that companies need to be able to make decisions that protect their policies, their people, and their profits, right? So Basically what I'm saying is companies still need to be able to make a profit regardless of who's on their platform, right? And saying what they're saying. And at the same time, I still think these platforms need to be regulated to ensure their benefits to people in general, right?
Yeah, that does make sense. And I totally agree with you in the fact that there needs to be an ethics framework that controls all of this, that needs to be out to the public so the public knows how and when certain people are being deplatformed and things are being censored, right?
Yep.
Because you never want to feel that each story that has two sides, there's only one side being represented on a certain platform. You want to have both the sides so you can make up your own mind, right? And that's one of the things that I think, I think we talked about this a little bit and on the ethics episode, was the social dilemma and how it sort of just brings to the forefront some things that we already know,
right,
in terms of confirmation bias. And which is why I think it's important to have freedom of speech, is that if I am thinking a certain way, so okay, let me backtrack. The internet is a vortex that has anything and everything you search for. You search for something crazy, there'll be some article proving it, you know?
Yeah.
Not necessarily that's true, but there'll be some article proving it, right? So it's important to be able to go on the internet and look at things and then make up your mind. But to do that, you need to have two sides of a story, which is why I think censoring and fake news is a very interesting topic, because like we said, we talked about the COVID situation. In that case, it's about saving lives, so do what's necessary. But in other situations where, you know, one side might be better than the other or not, it's not for sort of Twitter to decide, if that makes sense.
So yeah, that makes perfect sense. The only question that I have to you is how can we ensure that politicians who are typically driven by lobby groups, we see now that they can be driven by fake news groups and conspiracy theories. How do we square that? How do we look to the future and ensure that policies are data driven, and how can AI make that change?
Okay, so can AI make sure that data driven policies are the thing of the future? I totally believe so. That's what AI is sort of here for, data-driven insights that should help the world, right? We've seen in the past that like a lot of policies are again based off of your constituents, their beliefs, right? Politicians are bound to do stuff that their constituents believe in, which lo and behold, that's why the certain politician was selected or and put into office, is to represent their constituents, which makes sense. But there's also the society at large, right? We have to make sure that that is represented. So we've seen in the past that, you know, certain policies are based off of like personal hype, instinct, belief, like I said, right?
Yep.
And that's all well and good. There needs to be a mix of both. But there's so many vulnerabilities, specifically say in the economy, when it comes to health, when it comes to homelessness, stuff like that, that these key sort of pivotal issues, there's so many holes in them, right?
Yeah.
And there could be policies that prevent this from happening, right? So for example, let's say what's something that everybody really wants to not happen is a recession. And I know it's economists say that it's unavoidable. That's recession, depression, and peak and troughs are just part of the economy. But what if there was certain indicators that could tell you ahead of time that, hey, this is going to happen, so you might as well introduce some a policy right now to prevent the harshest sort of effects of it, right?
Yep.
And that's what AI is here to do. To humans, the cognitive abilities are only three-dimensional, right? Like, we look at three dimensions, and that's what we can perceive.
Yep.
At one point, right? But to an AI, dimensions or features or, in very data-specific term, columns, right? It can be multidimensional, right? It can be like millions of dimensions that can be understood by a supercomputer. So two things that you might not think are correlated, but might as well be, that affect, let's say, the economy or the housing crash or increase in homelessness. If you could know that a year before that was happening, you could potentially have these data-driven policies that could prevent it.
Yeah, there's sort of a warning mechanism that we can create for ourselves. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and we saw that happen on a very descriptive side in the mid-1990s. It actually started with New York, when the New York Police Department started geographically mapping this. And think about this in 2021, it's like the most archaic thing. But all they did was geographically start mapping where crimes were happening. Right? And that time it was all paper-based, but they start just mapping a little bit with the help of computers where crimes were happening in specific neighborhoods. And they were able to increase police force in that neighborhoods and bring down murder rate. I'm just reading it off of my notes here. That plummeted to almost 70%. So
that's incredible.
You could see that it's been happening for a while. But with AI, we get that sort of lag time that can help us prevent stuff instead of being reactive. Again, the reactive proactive debate here.
That's kind of it, right? Like, and I mean, I think people have to lead that to a certain extent, right? Mm-hmm. And that sort of leads me into my next question. How can we ensure the development of AI is led by people who put the benefits that an AI can bring to society over like a profit model, really, at the end of the day? I want to talk about I'm going to butcher the name, Timnit Gebru, the employee at Google.
Yes.
That was fired just a while ago, mm-hmm. after she expressed her dismay over the lack of diversity that the company currently represents.
Yeah.
So just in that, like, how can we do that?
So the incident, for people that are not aware, what happened was, according to her, she tweeted that she was immediately fired for an email she sent to Google's Brain Women and Allies internal mailing list. She expressed dismay over the ongoing lack of diversity at the company and frustration over an internal process related to the review of a not yet published research paper she co-authored. And here's the thing with lack of diversity, and which directly leads into bias that we talked about in episode 3.
This is exactly
all straight getting into the conversation around bias and how we should avoid this, right? And I am a very big advocate of two sides of a story. Who knows what exactly happened, because I think Google's not responding to exact questions there, which makes sense. They're a large company. They're trying to protect their reputation here. So I don't know exactly what happened, but it might be that there was a certain technology being developed, and due to the lack of diversity, there were certain biases, inherent and apparent biases, that are being introduced to a certain technology that Timnit wasn't happy with. And that's what caused her sort of internally emailing everybody and, you know, potentially getting fired for it. How can we make sure that doesn't happen is through, again, that ethics framework. And I keep coming back to this, and it's going to sound sort of boring and repetitive, but it's really important. An ethics framework makes sure that we are not letting Timnit Gebru's of the world being silenced by bigger companies like Google. Whether she was right or wrong, I don't know. I'm not commenting on that. I'm just saying her silence within the company was not warranted, because if she's right and she was fired over sending an email of being happy about lack of diversity, you can see that's not right, because she's honestly just complaining that, hey, because of your lack of diversity, some AI you're producing, some technology you're producing is not going to be the best in the future. And through an ethics framework, we can make sure that, you know, there are certain guidelines for when you can't sort of let go of an employee that's complaining about AI diversity and bias.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't even think of it as necessarily complaining. I think as she's presenting an argument to improve the company at the end of the day, right? Because diversity also can lead to a lot of profit benefits as well, because you're reaching out to different people. You're reaching a new markets, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the big benefit of diversity, really, at the end of the day.
Yeah, and it's totally necessary because we live in a world that is a conglomerate of different races, beliefs, castes.
You name it.
Religious beliefs and whatnot, right?
Yeah.
And we need to have a company like Google that controls world's over 80%, I think, is world's search population. So over 80% of the world, I think, uses Google to search on a primary basis. They might use other search engines here and there.
Right.
So when a giant like that is silencing one of its own over the lack of diversity, how can that be prevented if not for an outside organization controlling this? You know, we have the UN so that there's peace in the world, right? It's time that AI has its UN.
Or is represented by the UN, really.
Is exactly, either way, represented by the UN or has exactly some organization that's doing that. And on that, I'll tell you something that cool happened in the recent past. And I think this was in December, where the neural information processing systems, and sorry, I'm looking down, I'm just reading it off.
No, it's all good.
I wanted to make sure my facts are right here. The neural IPS, it took place, so this is a machine learning and computational neuroscience conference that is held every December, right? And what happens is they talk about what's new in this space and how we can improve it. And for the first time this December, they said, and I'm quoting here, is that we need to have a panel of reviewers to scrutinize papers that raise ethical concerns. Jack Paulson, founder of the industry watchdog Tech Inquiry in Toronto, Canada, says that I think there's a lot of value even getting people to think about these things. That's the minimum we can do, right?
Right.
Researchers are already looking into things like fake news to the CNNs, deepfakes, which is fakes of people, so a certain head attached to a different body, which looks exactly like it should, but it's not. So, you know, you can see how there can be sort of A-rated content produced off of deepfakes, right? And we've seen that. It's a period of sort of techno-optimism, says Eason Gabriel. He's an ethical AI powerhouse in DeepMind, which is a sister company of Google. And we could see that in this conference, people are arguing and calling out for more and more ethical frameworks.
That's awesome, man. That's such good news.
And especially in the sort of world that we live in, we need regulations. We know that this technology is here and it's here to stay. Without regulation, we can't have a world that is functional, in my opinion. So why not have those conversations right now, and sort of why not make sure that we're on the right track?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so I guess that's where we're ending today's conversation. We talked about a lot of interesting things, specifically in AI in politics. Talked about fake news, malicious actors, data-driven policies, and how it all ties together with AI. And to conclude our talk today, I'm going to talk about something that's top of mind, very recent. Everybody knows about it, thinks about it all the time. It's the COVID-19 pandemic.
Right.
And we've seen that governments during this time, every action they take is nitpicked. Everything they do is looked at with the narrowest lens ever, right? And that brings up our topic about conversation about fake news. Can fake news about this virus be stopped through an AI? And absolutely it can. We've seen that with Twitter. We've seen that with Facebook, banning people, stopping the spread of this fake news, because at the end of the day, this is about life and death. This is not funny. This is very serious. And it should be taken and treated the same way.
Yeah, I can agree more.
And there's evidence, right?
Yep.
There's evidence that supports this. Countries that took data-driven decisions, like South Korea, Australia, and New Zealand, that locked down early, that made masks mandatory, that made 6 feet distancing mandatory and in place for as long as possible, they're faring well. but maybe some other countries like the US are not, because they didn't act fast enough, right? So this past year, we've seen that AI and politics and data-driven decisions, and specifically the COVID-19 modeling, we know that the way countries decide or governments decide to open things up or lock things down is through AI-based modeling or epidemiological-based modeling, which has statistical roots that predicts the number of cases or how and the number of deaths and hospitalizations in the near future, which ends up being the decision factor in whether a country or a economy or a government is going to open or not. We know that that has that. We know that AI and politics are tightly wound up, and that gives us a unique opportunity to push AI in the manner we want it to. Make sure that data-driven policies are now the norm and not policies that are made out of hype or public perception.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it's a hard time to be in politics. If you're a politician right now, you're trying to make these decisions and you're weighing the pros and cons of the economy versus the welfare and healthcare of people, of your constituents. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a rough balance for anyone to navigate. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah, that's kind of the way I feel about it. But at the end of the day, it's nice to know that we have information being driven to politicians so that they can make decisions based on when to lock down, when to open up, you know, gyms, when to open up, you know, friends and family, really, at the end of the day. That's what exactly. everybody's craving, yeah. I think, right now, for the most part. Is when can I visit people again, right?
when can I get a hug from my best friend? When can I, you know,
yeah.
just go to a movie theater and watch a movie? Yeah, stuff like that, absolutely.
Yeah, just get back to normal, right? That's the toughest challenge that politicians right now are navigating through, because really, at the end of the day, they're looking at the models. They're looking at what, you know, the data that they're being fed, and they're making tough choices because it can change in a moment.
Exactly.
And that's a wrap. Join us next week as we talk about the protections that AI can bring to help enforce the law, to safeguard society, and solve cases.
And we would love to hear from you. If you have any feedback or questions for our team, or topics that you would like us to cover, please let us know. Drop us a line on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn, or visit us at mnpdigital.ca.